So in the first two lectures, so we dealt with the binary optimization. So now we move to the natural extension to non-binary one. And so I will talk about total variation. By total variation here, I will deal with discrete total variation. So I will explain what it is and some applications. So before starting, then I introduce some notations. So they're a bit different from before. So I will consider that we have a grid. A grid can be regular and not regular. So it means I have nodes. So assume that you have some sensors, and so you image your objects at those points. And so I denote those nodes by some indices, S or T. What I observed is an image or a signal U, so the value here will be US, here it will be UT, and so U will be an image defined on this set. Then I will handle this grid with a neighborhood system. So the neighborhood system is essentially telling me who are my neighbors. So it can be, again, arbitrary. Two neighbors, it means two sites. If they are neighbors, then you draw an edge. So in that sense, you can see it as a graph. Most of the time, you have a regular grid like that. And again, most of the time, you undo it with the nearest neighbors. So 4 neighbors, 8 neighbors, and so on. But it can be, again, arbitrary. So if you are doing Markov random field or Bayesian analysis, then we call the clicks. It means 2 variables that are in interaction, then you call that a click. That's just a name. Something very important that we are going to deal with is, oh, I forgot to say, here, US, every point, I do not leave, it is not a binary value, it's non-binary, but it's not real. Neither, it's L minus 1, yeah. I assume that each value of my image at the site S lives in a finite set. This is not real number, I mean, this can be a bunch of real numbers, but up to a bijection you can say it is integers, and those are finite. In this talk, everything is finite. So a finite number. Let's think that it could be 1, 0, 1, 2, 3, and most of the time it will be up to 255. Okay, so it's quantized. So later in the talk, most probably this afternoon, then we'll be able to replace that by R. But right now, we stick to that. And what we're going to consider is the level set. So you give me an image, and I'm going to consider the lower level set. What is the lower level set? Well, assume you have a signal. So this is spatial. This is your gray level value. And you give me a number lambda, and I threshold my signal. And I will consider pixels that are below my threshold. Those points here, those points here. So if you give me U and you give me a lambda, for every pixel, I will test if they are above or below lambda. If they are below lambda, then I will say I belong to the lower level set. The important thing just to remember here is that you give me an image, then I can go to a binary image. You can see U lambda as a binary image. We'll say it is 1 if I am below lambda, and it will be 0 otherwise. So all we're going to do in this talk is to reformulate our problem in terms of these binary variables. So originally, we're going to solve a problem for U, where each component lives here, and the goal will be to formulate it with new variables and the new variables would be the US lambda for all lambda and for all s. So we're going to use that as new variables. What would be the goal? The goal will be that those new variables that are binary, then we're going to optimize them using the graph cut approach. So I'm going to show the reformulation. So we're doing that for TV. What is TV? Well, TV in the continuous world, you have an image defined on the domain omega, and then you write it like that. So this is a measure. Essentially, you can say, I take the gradient, and I get the L1 norm of the gradient. So this is wrong saying that, but it's a fair approximation. Okay, so you take the gradient, L1 of this gradient. Now, you have what we call the, a Courier formula, which saying that if you want to express this quantity, which is also called the total variation of U, then you have the Courier formula that states that you give me a lambda, I threshold my U. This will be a binary image. Or you can say it's a set. And I'm going to compute the perimeter of this set. The perimeter. And I'm going to integrate this quantity over all lambda. And those two quantities will be the same. The Courier formula. So this is essentially due to, I mean, when you are in continuous, then you need a theorem. If everything is fine, if you take the absolute value, then it's easy to check that you're only counting when you are between the two values. That's all. That's all we're saying. And it can be extended to the gradient of U. So general, this is a Courier formula. So from here, we go to this parameter. Now we say everything is discrete and quantized. So my integral, since I live in some prescribed value, will become a sum. So I need to sum some parameters. That's all I'm doing. The integral becomes a sum. And now the perimeter, as we saw before, we work on a discrete grid, and we can write the perimeter with this form. So again, we had sum of IST of US lambda minus UT lambda. And this is the perimeter, what we define the perimeter for U lambda. You remember in the previous talk, for the graph cut, we said what we are able to do is to define perimeters. So here, this is how I define a perimeter for the binary image U lambda. And I can put some coefficients here, if you want. Okay, so this is what we get. Yes. If you are here, right. If you are here, then yes. I mean, okay, let me be clear. This is formal, okay? This is formal. This is a measure, blah, 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 and I don't define it. So this is very formal. If you say, yeah, that was the motivation. So here I am also very formal. Now you say, okay. If I'm not in the infinite dimension world, but if I am finite, you say U will be Rn, and we're going to live in Rn. And so how do you approximate TV? One way is you say you take the little L2 of your gradient, like that. Or I could do this one. Those are the two generals, and you could put many of them. What you need, and this is the important key, what you need is the Courier formula to hold. Okay. So we'll go more. I will do this presentation twice. Here, computer science and more variational analysis. So it will be maybe more clear later. But the important point is you need this equality to hold. For that, you need the submodularity. So I will explain, but it means you can get a Courier formula for this formulation. This one is not okay. You cannot define TV using this discretization. So, I mean, you can define TV like that. Now, if you want to write the equality as a Courier formula, the integral of a parameter of a set, then you cannot write it. If U is a function, yes, you can write it in infinite dimension. Right. Now, what I'm saying is that I live in finite dimension. I need to define a TV. If I define TV like this, then it's fine. I can write that. If I define TV like this, then I do not have the equality. So yeah, this is something very important, I know, because most of the time you want to do this, I mean, most of the time. If you come from a variational world, PDE world, then this is the discretization that of TV that you do. Why are you doing that? Essentially, it's because when you refine your grid, then you will have the gamma convergence of this toward that, and then you are happy. You have the convergence that you want. Means minimizer will go of this, will converge to the minimizer of that, and you are very happy. But that's the thing. If you want this, then although you have the convergence, unless you are at epsilon equals zero, then you never have this equality. Never. Never. So if you ask the question, okay. I can define it like that. I don't know. As far as I know, I don't know. And I believe it's wrong. But it's only a belief. It's only a belief. I would say open question, but most probably, no, there is no way. No way. No. Of course not. So, what else? So yeah, so you need to define TV so that you can always write that for the graph cut approach. So I'm not going into details, but essentially, if you are working in finite dimension with pairwise interaction or more elaborate interaction, and that you will want to use the graph cut approach, everything will amount to that kind of formula. More elaborated, but that will be it. Okay, so this is very restrictive. Very restrictive. You will have to get that kind of things. So essentially everything will take this form, more or less. So there is no hope of working hard here and trying to extend, and we did that for years, and at the end of the day, you have a very complicated formula, and by clever calculus, or not clever, but boring, then you can say, oh, at the end of the day, it takes this form. So everything reduces to this form. Okay, all right. So we had our abstract TV, and essentially this is how we're going to define the TV in for graph. So what does that say? What is this formula? We're also saying that our TV, or let's call it TV of U rather than writing that, we define our TV of U as being the sum of a ST of W. IST of US minus UT. If you remove the lambda, if you sum over the lambda here of this quantity, then this will be US minus UT. Okay? So, what are we doing? We say we have an image U, then we define a discrete gradient, the discrete gradient is given by who are my neighbors, so standard discretization. So here I have what I could write a gradient of J. If I call my graph, or let's call it S, big S, that was my node, so it's the graph. This is a linear operator matrix that defines my gradient, and then I take little L1 of this vector. This difference, you can write it as the gradient as an operator on this node, on the graph. That's all I'm saying. So it's very basic form, a little L1 norm of this vector. Whereas here, we were using a discrete operator for getting the difference, and then we were using the little L2. At the end of the day, what we did here is that you give me a U, and I am able to express the total variation in terms of the binary variables, U lambda. That's the important point. So I just call it RST and a function of the thresholded version of U. That was my goal. I want to express everything that was in terms of U in terms of those variables. So we got TV, and what we wish to optimize is, let's call it DS US VS. So this is an observed image. So you will get your TV of U, sum over S, and this is an energy of U that depends on the image, and so you want to minimize for U. So we were able to deal with this part to reformulate. Now we need to deal with this part. We need to re-express this in terms of US, in terms of the US lambda, the threshold inversion. So we're going to take one term here. And what we're going to do is something very basic. We're going to integrate the derivative. But here, since everything is quantized, this is the integral. You can see the integral. Here it's a derivative. D of lambda plus 1 minus lambda. So it will be D prime if you go to the continuous. The integral of the derivative. And then you have the first term. We're just saying that in the continuous it will be f of x will be the integral of 0 up to x of f prime of t dt, and then I think we do that kind of thing. Less than 0. Is that true, that formula? But essentially this is what we say. Or maybe it's wrong anyway. I mean, the idea, whatever. The idea is to formulate like that. So we integrate the derivative, and now we say, okay, we integrate not only up to x, but we integrate into everything. So we need to stop. So here we say we can integrate from 0 to infinity as long as x, as long as t is below x. So you want to integrate the derivative. You start from 0. You want to get the value at x. So you integrate the derivative up to you reach the value x. That's all I'm saying. That will kill the part of the integral that you are not interested in it. And again, what you get is you had a u, and now I got only u lambda. So now what I want to do is to sum those two terms. So there was a problem here. Okay, so you sum those two terms, and what you get is you get a sum over your thresholded version, lambda. Then comes the TV part. Then comes the data fidelity part. Then you have a constant. The important thing is you had an energy in terms of U. Now I have a sum of energies for each level lambda. And the variable is U lambda. Is that all right? Okay. D at the end, D needs to be convex. Needs to be a convex function. No, it could be d of u of v. It's more general, but for simplicity, you can say it's minus, and generally, you're going to put a p norm for p equals 1 or p equals 2. So this is, I mean, I'm going to that in the next slide, but the important thing is, of course, you have convexity, and you need, I mean, maybe you need more assumptions here, because you need to, I mean, the function needs to be absolutely continuous to be able to write that kind of things. But when you have convexity in finite dimension, it's fine. So essentially, you need convexity. So again, to be clear, I had my original energy in terms of my image u, and I was able to rewrite it as the sum of binary energies. Now, the question is the following. I want to minimize this, so I'm going to say, well, I got a sum of energy. I'm going to optimize if I am able to... Okay, I'm saying the following, sorry. I'm going to optimize independently each of them, each of the term of the sum. So the sum will be minimal. Okay, you minimize independently each of the term. So that will be a lower bound of this energy. Now I'm saying, do I get the equality? Will I get the equality? So this is what we do. We minimize independently each binary energy. So it will be a binary Markov quantum field. This is the graph cut. So from the energy, I go to my family of binary energies. I minimize for each of them. I get some result, u lambda. And I'm saying, from these binary images, can I reconstruct the solution? So here, let me tell you that if this is a standard result that says the following. I mean, maybe it was, actually it was done here. I get a u, and I threshold it at lambda. So you give me a u, I get the level set. Now you ask the question, if you give me all the level sets of a function, you give me all the level sets for all possible lambda, can I reconstruct u? The answer is yes. We are using this formula, which says something simple. It says, as long as you are a lower level set, it means you can go up, and then you look for the transition between when you are in the lower level set of lambda and when you are not in it anymore. That will give you exactly the value of your function. So if you know all the level set, then you know your function. So you can go back and forth. Knowing u or knowing the level set is the same thing. But if you give me a bunch of binary images, maybe you're not defining a function. Example, you take a mushroom. This is not a function. This is not a, because you give me this point and then I got three different possible values. So what you know, you have the equivalence between a function and knowing all its level set if you have an inclusion property. It means if I am lower than that, then here, this when I threshold at this version here, I also need to be lower. So the level sets have an inclusion property. They are growing. So you have a monotony property. So you can reconstruct if you have this. Now the amazing thing, I mean, I still believe it's amazing. We were minimizing independently each of these terms. We get some results, and you say, do we have this monotone property? If yes, then it means we can define a u that will be a minimizer of our energy. And the answer is yes, you will have this property if you minimize independently, provided D is convex. What we write here, any local configuration, if you write that in terms of D, it means the data fidelity is convex. You don't need differentiability of D. You only need convexity. That's all you need. Meaning, if you put a 1 here, then this is not a strictly convex functional, but yes, you will get this result. It's still okay. So any separable data fidelity, let's say LP norm of the difference, plus the TV that was defined using the Courier formula, satisfying this theorem, so it means if you minimize independently, you get that. So the level set, I mean, the binary images define level sets of a function. Since you have the level sets, you can build your U, and U is the global minimizer. Note that this is pretty, as far as I know, this is pretty unusual. I mean, that you minimize independently the term of the sum, then this is true in the continuous. So yeah, I was going from computer science to computer science TV, then we'll go to from variational one, and yes, all those results extend to the continuous one. So essentially, you need this to hold. So if you have that in the continuous one, then fine. If you don't have it, then I don't know. But most probably not. So the important thing is that we were able to reformulate this optimization problem to a bunch of binary ones. That's the important thing. So can we optimize any of the binary energy? Then this is what we saw before. Yes, using the graph cut approach, we'll be able to solve the binary energies. So let me write it like that. We had our binary energy linear term, the prior. So here we say we can do the graph cut approach if we have the submodularity energy, but as I presented before, if we have that kind of energy, that kind of form. So this is a parameter. The submodularity, this is the necessary and sufficient condition for applying the graph cut approach, so it's okay. So parameter. So yes, we can do that. So now, how can we do in practice? My energy and a bunch of binary optimization problem. Well, you could do the naive approach. We say, we start from the lowest gray level, say 0, we optimize, then we go to the next one, L plus lambda plus 1. We optimize and do that again and again and again. So we have to do L minus 1 graph cut approach. Well, then now there are two things. Let's start with the dichotomy. The dichotomy is also called, it's dichotomy in French, but I think we call that binary search in English. The idea is very simple. L can be big, so what we would like is to go to logarithm of 2 of L. So we have 0 and we have L. So instead of, if you want to search for people in this room, so I'm thinking about someone, so the naive algorithm will say, is it the person I'm looking for? You answer yes or no, and then I go to the next one. And so you will ask L question. A faster way of doing that is I cut the number of people into 2, and I say, is the person I'm looking for on the right or on the left? And then I can discard half of the person, and then I do that again and again. And I will have to ask only logarithm of L questions. So the same goes here for the level set. Because every time you do an optimization, you solve an optimization problem for lambda, what is the answer you get? You know, for every pixel, for every pixel, if they are above or below lambda. So you know if the optimal solution for this pixel will be above or below lambda. So assume for this pixel that, oh, I ask the question for L over 2. And I say, well, you are below L over 2. I can disturb this area. Because if I ask the question for a new lambda here, and I say, well, you were below L over 2, so of course you will be below L over 2 plus delta. So you don't need to ask the question again. So for every time you do an optimization problem, you discount for each pixel half of the possibilities. Is that okay for everyone? Again, remember, the question, I think you need to know that when you solve this problem, you answer the question. And the question is the optimal solution is above or below lambda? And you ask that question for each pixel. This is what you get. So from L, we'll go to L, to logarithm of L. But you got something also more important, something independent and complementary of, this is due to the L1 norm. Assume that I solve for the level lambda. So here I represent the result with the different lines to say if I am above or below lambda for each region. So here I have three regions, and I say I am above lambda, below, and below. Then I can take this image and cut it into pieces in the connected components, where here I am, let's say, below, and I remove the part that are above, and so on. And I'm going to optimize independently for each of the pieces. So I'm doing that each for the pieces, and I do that again and again. And at the end, I got the solution for each of the pieces, and I put them back. And I'm claiming that doing this process gives the optimal solution. Why is that? The idea comes from this. This term here tells you what? It tells you that when you look at the TV, you have the value of your solution at point S. And you say, to be able to estimate this quantity, that I need to know the value of my neighbor. But the Courier formula tells you that, no, you don't need to know the value U when you are considering the level lambda. You only need to know if your neighbor will be greater or lower than lambda. So assume that you take a pixel here. I know that I am strictly lower than lambda, and here strictly greater than lambda, lower and greater. And you're going to evaluate this quantity. This will always be 1. Because you know you are below, you know you are above. So every time you are considering an interaction that goes from this place to this place here, then you already know the result. So it means you know the boundary condition. If here you were asking in continuous, what is the boundary condition, then it's given by that, and I can evaluate. Even though I don't know the exact, I don't know the optimal value of you. I only know the if the minimizer is below or above lambda. And that's enough to define my boundary condition. So again, this is very specific to L1. If you put something quadratic before, then you do not have the Courier formula, then you would solve a Laplacian, then you would say, I need to know the value. Here, you don't need to know the value. Only if it's above or below lambda. Me. I saw that, yeah. I don't know how, this is pure computer science, I would say. I mean, when you do computer science studies, then when you see that kind of thing, then suddenly you wake up and you say, well, you don't need to know you. So I don't know, this is an interesting question, and I don't know the answer, is when do you, for what kind of energies you have that? So, okay, you will have that kind of behavior for that. Do you have other kind of energy? I don't know. So this is very nice because you can solve the problem independently. So you have a big problem. At first you solve a big one, but then you refine more and more, and the problems are smaller and smaller, and so they are faster to solve. So, and in which order you ask the question lambda, again, I told you, with the binary search. So you are doing that. So we can get a result like that. So this is an original image. Okay, you take a picture, you get that. Then you add some noise. So the noise here is IID, independently and identically distributed. It's Gaussian noise. The mean is 0 and sigma is 12. I have to say that my image lives between, okay, here, every pixel takes the value integer number between 0 and 255. I have to say also that we never write in papers that when I add some noise, then of course this is quantized, so I quantize the noisy version, and also that I could go below 0 and I could go above 255, and I chop also. So this result here I show does not follow Gaussian noise, since it has been quantized, and it's also truncated. Even though I'm still going to solve my optimization problem as if it was a Gaussian noise, meaning I'm going to minimize for u minus v greater than 2 squared plus tv of u. But this modeling here does not reflect the image I observe here. But this is what people are doing, and it's okay. It's not that bad. Just from the culture. So what is my beta? My beta, because this work has been done with Marc Sigel in France. He's a physicist. And when you're doing macroquantum field, this is an electromagnetic field, and beta is the strength of the electromagnetic field. So we put beta. If you are doing variational stuff, then most of the time you put a T or a lambda here, or sometimes over there. But it's the same. If you multiply everything by, if you put beta here and you multiply by beta, then you put it over there. So it doesn't change anything. It depends on where you come from. So I pick a value of beta. So here it's 23, it's point. 23.5. And why is that? Because when I pick this value, I'm happy with the result. I have no way to tell you what kind of value of beta to choose at first. Just I try and I show you the result I like. This is again open question, how to pick the beta in a good way for image processing. And in what sense even the criteria is difficult to define. I mean, this is a pure image processing problem that, as far as I know, nobody solved. And it depends on your problem. So I pick the one that I like.
You like by look, or you like by something better?
Oh, no, here it's only by look. Oh, yeah. The beta depends a lot on what is the original image. Because if you have... Okay, what is the effect of a TV? Well, TV will say you want to have a sparse gradient. Okay? So if your signal is a texture with a highly oscillating pattern, so you don't want to filter a lot. Because if you filter a lot, then you will remove the oscillating pattern. So you will say, well, I cannot filter a lot. So you cannot remove a lot of noise. So beta will have to be very small. If your image is black, then you can essentially want to put a beta to infinity. And so it depends a lot on what you observe.
And that's the difficulty on how you want to pick it. Yes, Prashant.
If you know the lines that you're adding
to make up. Yep. Yeah, you can plot. You can plot the distance between your construction to the original image, or you can look at the residual, the power of the residual, and look at that. The thing is, here, the beta, I can tell you, that I pick is a bit higher than the optimal one in the sense you defined it. Why is that? Because the human eye tends to... You prefer results when the things are a little bit higher. Some people study that, and it turns out that we overestimate the beta as human, according to your criteria. So it was fine. I say I like this one. That's all.
We like things
more. Kind of, yeah. So here I increase the strength, the energy of the noise, and I get that kind of result. So no, we don't have a... So what we can see, maybe you don't see, but if you look at the part of the image here, what you will observe, you don't see it, I guess. Sorry? It's blocky, yeah. So if you draw a line from here to over there, like that, here, and you look at the signal will be like that. So this is the staircase. What we call in TV, you have the staircase. It means your signal will be, yes, piecewise constant, but you would prefer to get a straight line. But if you compute the total variation of the straight line of the staircase, they have the same value. So both solutions have the same total variation. So you get that. Why do you get the staircase and not the straight line? Well, you had some random noise. So, you know, the pixels were randomly, some were up, some were down, and then you will observe, in average, something like that. We would prefer this. But TV is picking one solution among all the possible ones, and you don't get that because it was noisy. So you have here kind of... The minimizer is well-defined, it's strictly convex, but if you apply a perturbation, then you can see different kind of staircase. So here, this is not that robust. And especially here, when you look at the result here, then you don't like that. You don't like staircasing. Something important. So that was proved, as far as I know, in some paper by Mila Nikolova. I forgot the year, but let's say 2002, 2003, I mean the beginning of 2000s, that you will observe a staircase if you are not differentiable in zero. That kind of behavior happens because you are dealing with a non-differentiable convex problem. Here, TV, it's L1, it's not differentiable in zero. And you should expect the staircase for any kind of priors where you have non-differentiability in zero. So you can expect that. And you shouldn't expect staircase if, let's say, you are quadratic or differentiable in zero. So you won't observe the staircase. If you are, for instance, locally quadratic here, then you will get the straight line. So something very, we got this result in 2003, 2004. So people were talking about the staircase. But when you look at results, then you do not really see it. Why is that? Because most of the time, you are using ux squared plus uy squared plus epsilon. And epsilon is non-zero. And so you are differentiable. So of course, as epsilon tends to zero, then you have gamma convergence and you will observe the staircase. But in practice, it was hard to observe because you put epsilon to, I don't know, 10 minus 2, so you are differentiable. If you are looking at those range, then you don't really see the staircase. So when you... Okay, so then I was a postdoc of Tony Chan, so I show him the result and Stan Osher, and I say, your results are terrible. That cannot be TV. That cannot be TV. It's the TV result because epsilon, I mean, here it could be, you could say it's like that, square root. So, sorry. And again, epsilon in that case is zero. So you get the staircase. And when you see that, then you're not happy at all. Not happy at all for natural images.
You were showing
the
result with staircasing or without?
The width.
Yeah,
because what they saw before for many years was with epsilon, and you have the differentiability, so you tend to remove the staircase. So at the beginning of the first talk, I said I think it's important to get exact results to study the behavior of the model, and because if you use an approximate version, then it's fine, but maybe you miss something, then here this is exactly the case. You minimize exactly, and then you see something that you don't want to see. And using another algorithm, I mean, you put the epsilon because of the algorithm, and then you remove something that you didn't want. So let's say that for natural images, if you minimize exactly TV, then you're not happy. You need to do something else. Yes? What do we lose? For instance, I cannot use the graph cut approach because you do not have the Courier formula. I do not have the Courier formula with my epsilon. So, for instance, then I cannot use a graph cut. And so, fine, you can use something else, but then I say I cannot optimize that. If you fix the boundary, yeah, that's is that a question? And I don't know how to react. Yeah.
No.
But the minimizer is still unique. What I'm saying is that what you observe, what you assume that you were observing this line here, that was the original signal. But then it is noisy. You had some noise. So I don't know. Your signal could be like that. And TV, I mean, TV will say, I mean, the way this model will say, this is the solution. I say, fine, it's well defined, but. But maybe if you move a little bit the noise in the observed image, then maybe you would reduce the staircase. That's just what I'm saying. Yes?
What happens if you apply TV to a noise estimate?
If you have no noise, then you will... So if you apply in TV, I mean, you can do it, and then you will simplify in the sense that you will have a more piecewise constant area. Yeah, but okay. Here, let me say something that, yes, I agree from an image processing point of view. Here, we are using a model of the term, let's say, quadratic plus TV. So if you change, I mean, then you, if you're talking about variational method, you will have data fidelity term and a prior, okay? So what you're saying is that all those methods will fail, all of them, because you have a parameter beta, and you're saying if it's noiseless, then you need to know that beta must be zero, because you don't want to touch anything. But we're not, this is not the way we formulated the problem. We say, okay, we say we have data fidelity plus beta prior. And we never talk, doing this formulation, how we select beta. Okay? Now you're telling me there is no noise. So if there is no noise, it means I need to remove the prior so that the data will give me what I observe is what I want. But this is not an optimization problem. This is a parameter estimation problem. Am I clear? Because optimization, beta is fixed. You give me beta. You give me beta. I assume beta is given by Holy God or whatever, or you. And what you're telling me is that, what you're telling me is that if I have no noise and I put beta different from zero,
okay,
then I will get a bad result. And what I'm saying is that this is not only the problem of TV. This is the problem of all those methods. All of them. All of them will fail. If you give me a wrong beta, then...
Can you put beta somewhere in the information process? But again, you want to optimize the
quality of the image. There is a huge literature in the 90s about parameter estimation in Bayesian framework. A huge. And they got some results. And they work okay. Okay. Doesn't mean that it's useful in practice. So, as far as I know, it's still an open problem. Okay, but then I would say, when you are in a math department, then yes, you do that. When you go to some biologists, they say, we have no truth, no ground truth.
Oh,
so we have no quality measure, so we don't know.
I like the concept to define quality by beta. So quality of the image is given by beta. Quality of the image is given
by beta. That's what you mean in your life. Yeah, true. So yeah, you know, again, here I'm dealing with the optimization of this problem, and beta is given somehow. And I am not telling anything how you pick beta. I know, that's a shame, but... okay, so on some, so you get several kind of images, just to give you some... Yeah. Yeah, maybe of this one. So when you do that, okay, and those results are, I mean, almost a 10-year-old computer. So just to give you the idea. Okay, what I'm saying is the following. Here I got a 512 squared image. Here I have got 4 times less pixel. Okay, I divide the dimension by 2. The number of pixels by 2 in each dimension, so 4 times less pixel. If you give me a number here and I divide it by 4, then I almost get this. So for almost everyone, it's more or less 4. So when I told you the graph cut is linear in time, when I divide the number of pixels by 4, I divide the time by 4. And you can plot the curve and you get something quasi-linear. So again, in practice sometimes. So you say, why linear? I don't know. I plot and it's linear. Now, beta is in front of the prior. So what's going on when you're going to regularize more and more? Then here you have a dependence. And the dependence is not linear. I mean, what I'm saying is that you are in the range for the image denoising between 10 and 30. So this is the range you should expect. So you have a dependence that is, it's not so clear what is the dependence, but it could be linear or a little bit quadratic with respect to beta. It depends on the image. But more or less, what we see is that, look, it depends on, because on those images, it's fine, but on some others, sometimes you get something that are not fine. But more, what I'm saying is that you have a dependence, but you have the content of the images are different, a bit different from this is IAL. You have textures here it's kind of nice because everything is flat. here you have a bit of structure and flat zones, so you get more or less the same order of speed. So more or less, whatever you observe for natural imaging, then you can expand, you know more or less how much time it will take. If you give me a crazy image, then maybe the time will be much less. For instance, you give me a black image, then it's super fast. If you give me something crazy, then you have a deviation from this number. But for standard images, then this is what you observe. Now you divide the time by 5, at least, with a recent computer. So it's about 0.1 second. Yes? I want the optimal solution for you that lives in here. Am I clear or not? Exactly. It's quantized. So I pick the best one for each pixel, like that. So in that sense, there is, I mean, no stopping criteria in the numerical analysis sense. This is a selection problem. So I select the... If I force the time here? No. Beta is this. By time, you mean the time it takes? Yeah.
But actually, the image is so different. Some images have more black texture.
Yeah.
So it should be different for if you fix the time and at beta.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm following you. Okay. So I think we should. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Again, the answer will be define a perimeter somehow for vectors that satisfy that. The TV needs to satisfy that. Then yes, you can apply it. Now, you got many of them. Then many people will argue it. And again, it depends, I guess, on the problem. But again, this is the important thing. This is what you need to have. To do the graph cut. I have to say that, of course, to do the graph cut. If you don't want to do the graph cut, then you have more freedom. Yes.
Thanks very much.
All right. Yep.